Welcome to Gracious Words. Gracious Words is taken from the weekly women's Bible study taught by Cheryl Broderson at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.
We behold your glory, God, in the face of Christ. It shows us who you are.
Suffering is an unavoidable part of life, but it's not without meaning. Whether or not we understand it in the moment, God uses our trials to shape us, draw us closer to Him, and ultimately bring about His greater purpose. And now here is part two of Cheryl's message, titled, A Perspective on Suffering.
Although Jesus does not always alleviate or heal our suffering, He does compensate our suffering. He does comfort us in our suffering. He does know and understand and enter in with us in our suffering. He does reward our suffering. He does associate with our suffering. He does speak into our suffering. As C.S. Lewis said, God whispers to us, but when we're suffering, He shouts to us. And He uses our suffering. Going back to my dad, I remember him saying, you know, I've gotten to meet a lot of people this way and a lot of nurses, and I've got to share the gospel through this path of suffering. And I remember I used to go with him to his chemotherapy sessions, and you've never met a more open audience to the gospel than in that room while those patients are waiting for chemotherapy. God didn't alleviate it, but He entered it. And He gave purpose to it. In 2 Timothy 1, 8 through 18, we see that Paul wrote to Timothy, lightly touching on suffering. Paul talks about his own suffering, the purpose and blessing in suffering, and what he did in this suffering. Paul suffered in a myriad of ways. He suffered emotionally. In 2 Timothy 1:8, we see that Timothy was pulling away from Paul. So Paul wrote, "Therefore, do not be ashamed of the testimony of our Lord or of me, his prisoner, but share with me in the sufferings of the gospel according to the power of God." Association with Paul could put Timothy on Rome's radar. He would lose freedoms from his association with Paul. Also, Paul was condemned to death. And there is this tendency to want to shield oneself from the pain of loss. That when we know someone is dying, the usual response is to begin to distance our affections and our heart from them. I know that a lot of people, their biggest complaint when they've got a cancer diagnosis and they're dying is that no one wants to visit them anymore. All their friends kind of back away. And it's natural. You're shielding yourself from the pain of not seeing that person. You want to get used to life without that person in it. Because we have to become independent of them in order to survive. Timothy had a laundry list from Paul of the things he was supposed to do in the church of Ephesus. And now Paul wasn't going to be there to check up on him and to come and visit and to instruct him. It hurts to watch someone suffer. Earlier, Paul said, "I want you to come and see me. It will bring me so much joy." but I am mindful of your tears. I know this is going to hurt because it hurts to watch someone suffer. It killed me to watch my dad in pain. He had always been my hero, my tough guy. Remember, the guy with the pickaxe in his head. And I remember when he got a tumor on his sternum, when the tumor jumped out of the lung and now there was another one on his sternum. And I said to him, what's your pain level? Now, this is my dad who always said, great. I said, what's your pain level? And he looked at me and he said, unbearable. Everything had been bearable to my dad. But now here was something that was unbearable. And I remember it hurt so deeply in way I had never been hurt. It's like when your child is hurting or sick, that pain. I remember watching my dad in excruciating pain when they drained the fluid that accumulated in his lung. And I mean, it was like a gallon of fluid, and he would stand there and he would grasp onto the seat that he was holding, and he would do these deep breaths, and they would insert this huge needle and they would aspirate all that fluid. It was over a gallon of fluid. And as he did, the lung would begin to collapse, which I've heard is one of the most painful things in the world. And I would try to like make him smile, but I realized, Cheryl, shut up and pray. He's in pain and it hurt. And yet my father would call me every time he had that appointment and say, I need a ride. You're like, you've got four children. It's hard. It's hard. That emotional pain. It was hard for Timothy to associate with Paul because Paul was in prison. That was a suffering in itself. Paul was chained. Paul was condemned. Paul was hurting. Paul had been like a father to Timothy, his teacher, his mentor, his guide. Paul heard the voice of God so clearly. Timothy could be on autopilot. You know, I think a lot of people had their Christianity through Chuck Smith. And when Chuck died, their faith died. You could be on autopilot. You could just follow Paul's lead, Paul's advice, Paul's instruction. You didn't have to go, is this the voice of the Lord? Or is this what I ate last night? Is this really a vision from the Lord? Or am I doing this to myself? Paul could tell you, that's the Lord. That's not the Lord. That is a vision. That's not a vision. You know what I mean? Don't you? You want somebody that you can talk to and say, is this? And when Paul was dying, Timothy was losing all of that. He would have to hear the voice of the Lord for himself. And he would have to stir up the gifts. See, as long as Paul was around, Timothy didn't have to stir up his gifts. He could let them be latent because Paul could do it. Paul could do everything. But now Timothy would have to stir up those gifts and he'd have to put faith in those gifts that God had given him. I believe Paul felt the pain of Timothy pulling away from him. This was his son in the faith. This was his close ally. In Philippians 2:20, Paul says, for I have no one else like-minded, speaking of Timothy, who will genuinely care about your interests. All seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know his proven character because he has served with me in the gospel ministry like a son with a father. Paul knew the pain of feeling like he was losing someone emotionally. Paul knew physical suffering. After all, he was in prison and in chains, and it wasn't even like our prisons, which are not the best, right? I mean, it's not like you're going to the, you know, five-star hotel. It's prison. But our prisons compared to what he was in, the Mamertine prison, I was there in Rome. I can't remember the year. Please don't ask me. Somewhere in the 90s, 1999. And I remember going to the Mamertine prison, and it's like a, you climb down a ladder into this cave, and they used to just throw the straw and the food down to the prisoners. That's where Paul was. That's suffering. I mean, we won't go into it, but we're women. You can imagine, no flushing toilets down there. He knew physical suffering. Previously, for the gospel's sake, he had been beaten, whipped, shipwrecked, run out of town, stoned, just to name a few of his sufferings. He mentions a constant physical ailment in 2 Corinthians 12:7. He calls it a thorn in the flesh, a demon. It was agonizing. It was weakening. Paul knew physical suffering. Paul knew mental suffering. There is a certain shame in suffering. I belong to this cohort, and I remember the teacher was asking me, so Cheryl, I heard you were in the hospital. What's going on with you? So I, you know, yeah, I was there. And so he asked me to explain a little bit. Well, after that, this one guy was like, I hope Cheryl's not going to tell us about her time in the hospital again. And he kept posting these things on the side, and I'm like, I'm not even talking anymore. And I felt like I'm the second oldest person in this cohort. And I am the oldest woman by far in this cohort. I mean, they could all be my daughters. And so he kept like, I don't know. It was like, I felt humiliated enough that I had to go to the hospital. You know, going to the hospital is humiliating. They give you those little robes that you have to make sure that they don't split in the back, right? And you got that, you know, I called it Norman, but that, you know, where all your fluids are coming into your body that, I don't know what you call those. Somebody who's in nursing knows. But, you know, those poles that you have to take with you everywhere. You know, Norman had to go in the bathroom with me. When I walked, Norman had to go with me. And, you know, it was humiliating because I felt less than the rest of the class. They're all young. They're all vibrant. They're all healthy. And there's a certain humiliation and embarrassment in being different than everybody else. In having your body break down. You who've had this, don't you know it? There's just a certain, I remember when I used to lose my voice as a young mom and the kids just would ignore me. There's a certain humiliation in that, like you don't matter anymore because we can't hear you. But there's a certain humiliation that comes with suffering. It separates you from others. It restricts you from doing what others can do. There is then the mental suffering of being in prison, the shame of being in prison or having a record or like even getting a ticket. I feel such shame when I get a ticket. Like, I got a ticket. I was speeding. I'm a speeder. Or, you know, I made an illegal U-turn. That was me. I'm an illegal U-turner. I've done it. I saw this sign. You know, there's this shame until you pay that debt. Then there's the shame of being publicly tried and humiliated. Everything being out there, all the lies being shouted out and knowing that some people are actually believing those lies. So Paul had Phygellus and Hermogenes lying about him, but he also had the lies in court. There was a prosecutor who was accusing Paul of stirring up riots, of actually, in those days, they believed that when Christians, when they took communion, were actually doing real sacrifices, drinking blood and eating flesh. Paul knew the separation, the humiliation of chains and imprisonment, and he walked among criminals as one of them. He mentions in verse 15 that all in Asia had turned from him. Rejection hurts, especially the more you've invested in others, the more it hurts. Like, you would really believe that about me? I thought we were friends. You really would believe that about me? It hurts deeply to be maligned and slandered, especially by those who are supposed to represent the love of Jesus. And remember, these were those in Asia. Paul had gone in Asia. Paul had suffered to go to Asia and to bring them the gospel. Paul had invested his life in them. They would not have heard the gospel or known the gospel without Paul. And now they're turning from him. Amphigellus and Hermogenes seem to be foremost in this. Perhaps they did it on YouTube or Twitter or Facebook. Who knows how they did it? Maybe they went from church to church slandering. But Paul knew that type of suffering. Whatever the case, Phygellus and Hermogenes' rhetoric had been so persuasive and so damaging that the majority of the churches Paul founded, established, and ministered to in Asia turned away from him, with the exception of Onesiphorus. Paul knew the suffering of loss. In Philippians 3:8, he said, "Because of him," speaking of Jesus, "I have suffered the loss of all things." He had lost his reputation. He had lost his status among the Pharisees, and now he was losing his status among those in the church of Asia. He felt the loss. Remember he will say at the end of 2 Timothy, "When you come to me, bring my jacket or bring my cloak and bring me some parchments." He knew the loss. Paul's unique perspective on suffering. When it comes to suffering, Paul, we're going to start with the negatives, does not numb it, doesn't ignore it, doesn't deny that it's there. He does not condemn it, does not blame it all on the devil or on a particular action or attitude that he had that was wrong. And he does not promise alleviation on earth. Throughout this epistle, he said, "My death is imminent. I know that where this is going." But Paul does give it a purpose. It's for the gospel. He centers his suffering on Jesus. It's worth it because the gospel is God's power and salvation. It's worth it because it will be rewarded. It will be compensated in heaven. Romans 8:18 says that our suffering on earth is not comparable to what God is going to give us in heaven. I think that there's going to be this special time, we're told that twice, once in Isaiah, once in Revelation, that God will wipe all the tears from our eyes. I think we're going to have this special time when we cry it all out. You know, we as women, we have to cry it out. Men say, "Don't cry." You're like, "Are you kidding? I need this. I have to do it." In fact, they say that having a good cry is actually healthy for you. So men say, "Don't cry." Jesus will say, "Go ahead and cry. Tell me all about it." And as they do, he goes, "Oh, you went through that? Here's this reward." Like you do with a little child. "Oh, you poor thing, you went through that. Let's go to Toys R Us and buy it out." He's going to compensate us. "I know you went through that. I know how hard it was. And look what I made you while you were suffering. Look what I created for you. Look at what I have for you because you went through this. I know. I know." Can you imagine? That's why Paul would also say in 2 Corinthians 4:16 and 17 that it's not worthy to be compared, the suffering on earth, which is momentary. It won't last, compared to the eternal weight of glory that we'll receive. We're going to receive gifts in heaven that nobody can ever take away. As Jesus said, where moth does not eat through it, rust does not decay it, and thieves can't touch it. This is what is waiting for us. It will be rewarded. Paul also tells us it's part and parcel of our holy calling. He said, for which, in verse 8, me as prisoner, but share with me in the sufferings for the gospel according to the power of God. It's part and parcel of our holy calling. He would say to Timothy, all who live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution. Peter would say, don't think it's strange, this suffering, this persecution, what you're going through. But remember that all of the brethren suffer. Paul also says that we've been given the grace in the calling of God to bear with it and even go beyond it. He says in verse 9, who has saved us and called us with a holy calling, not according to our works, but according to his own purpose and grace, which was given to us in Christ before time began. Then he tells us that Jesus did not exempt himself from suffering, but he glorified suffering and through it abolished death, brought immortality to light. In other words, God brings purpose to our suffering. He will use our suffering. I give it to you, Lord. What do you want to do with this suffering? I'm pretty much deaf in my right ear now. So that means I cannot listen to other people's conversations, which used to be like my favorite thing to do. And when I talk to people, I have to look right at them and really listen. And it takes effort. Lord, how will you use this? You know, see, we tend to think of like, this is useless. You know, I could serve you so much better without this. Instead of presenting it to God and say, I give you even my suffering to use for your glory in whatever way you want. Maybe it's just the compensation of grace. As God would say to Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 8 and 9, that his grace is sufficient. Maybe it's just to see that outpouring of grace, that his grace is more than enough for this suffering. Suffering reveals the true disposition of others. I am sure that when Paul was free and a powerful force, that Phygellus and Hermogenes at least feigned alignment or support of Paul. When you're popular, everybody likes you. When you got money, everybody likes you. However, when Paul was chained and in prison and condemned to death, the real nature of Phygellus and Hermogenes was revealed. Yet, at the same time, the true spiritual nature of Onesiphorus was also revealed. I think of David. It was when David was in exile, unpopular, King David, before he was king, when he was exiled and living outside of Israel, that it brought out the true nature of so many. Doeg, the Edomite, turned out to be a betrayer. Nabal, the Carmelite, was churlish. It brought out the true nature. How they responded to David showed how they would respond to the son of David. And during that time, it was those who felt defeated, those who were in debt, and those who were discouraged that came to David and became the mighty men.
Suffering is a reality that everyone faces, but God uses it for a greater purpose. Paul shares his own struggles, showing that suffering can deepen our faith and reliance on God. While it can bring emotional, physical, and mental pain, it also reveals the true nature of those around us. Paul reminds Timothy that suffering for the gospel is part of our calling and that God's grace is sufficient to sustain us. Ultimately, God does not waste our suffering. He enters into it, gives it purpose, and promises eternal reward. We hope you have been blessed by today's Bible study. For more information about the Gracious Words radio program and the teaching ministry of Cheryl Broderson, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. Coming up next time on the Gracious Words program, we'll look at the different types of relationships in the church as we continue our series, Letters to Lead, Live, and Love By, in the first epistle to Timothy with Cheryl Broderson. We do hope you make plans to join us. Again, for more information, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.